Om Gyanat Panandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. This looks like it's more than I thought. You're taking second initiation? Oh, you already have the sacred thread on. Oh, okay. So we'll talk about first initiation. There are, as we all know, hopefully, it is said, Krite tad dhyayato Vishnum, Tretayam dhyayato Mukai, Dwarpayam Paricharyam, Kalo tad dhare Kirtana. That the aim of Krishna consciousness is to become conscious of Krishna. And according to the Acharyas, our Acharyas, Smarta Vyaksaratam Vishnu, Vismartak Jatu Nakinchit, Sarva Vidi Nisedyasyor, Eteyor Eva Kinkara. That all the rules and regulations, both the Vidis, what we're supposed to do, and the what we're not supposed to do, so the sages, are that we're supposed to always remember Krishna, and we're never supposed to forget him. How that's done is different in different ages. In the age of Satyuga, people's capacity to think was so great they could simply sit in trance and meditate upon Krishna's pastimes. That's actually our goal. That's what we're striving to become or to be able to perform. But in this age, it's not possible to do it directly because our minds are so disturbed. They're so disturbed that we actually can't hear about Krishna, what to speak about talking about Krishna, and what to speak of remembering Krishna. We can hardly speak about him or hear about him. Our minds are so restless. We sit here for too long, everyone becomes restless. They want to do something else, especially it's going to be time for prasadam. We sit here too long. So what to speak of fixing our minds consistently upon Krishna? That's called asakti. That Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Sakta Manak Parada Yogam Yunjan Manashaya Asam Shayam Samagramam Yatag Yasasi Tatschinu. Now hear from me, O son of Kunti, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. One can achieve that position after passing through the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, namely Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga. Finally, one can come to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, which seems very simple, simply to sit here and hear, but our minds are not so submissive. Neither is our body so submissive. We can't sit still for very long. We can't listen for very long. We become very restless. But still, in Satyuga, people were able to do that. They were able to sit still and simply think about Krishna. Their whole atmosphere was full of Krishna consciousness. But when people became a little attached for some reason or another, then they had to sacrifice some of their possessions, and at that time, do their reliance upon Krishna and great ability to perform austerity, there was a lot of opulence, actual opulence. Namely, they had cows that gave milk, and they could get the ghee, which is actual opulence. Ghee is the milk, is the only food that's given by the by someone, namely the mother or some cow or a mother, out of love. The apple tree does not give its apple out of love, as far as I understand. Nor do the grains fall down to give us the grains out of love. Only the cow, for instance, is giving milk out of love to its calf. So love is the ultimate goal, is real opulence. Similarly, gold would be offered. Gold is solidified sunshine, which is prana, full of energy. In other words, things that were valuable were offered. It is not that they threw some plastic, you know, money into the fire and everyone was impressed. They threw 50 cents into the fire. No, they actually offered things that are valuable. And this way people gave up their attachment to material things and were able to meditate and trance upon Krishna, come to that platform. There wasn't a big gap. When Dharpa Yuga started, then people became even more attached. The impersonal tendency was there to a higher degree. So not only people had to sacrifice their material possessions, but they had to sacrifice their impersonal conception and actually sacrifice their energy in relationship to a personal God. That way, by sacrificing their energy in relation to a personal God, they could become enthusiastic to give up their material energies in the service of God and therefore come to the platform and be able to remain in trance thinking about Krishna. In Kali Yuga, we know nothing about God. What to speak of being willing to actually sacrifice our energies for God? What to speak of thinking about God? We're far away from Krishna in terms of consciousness. Therefore, in this age, it's recommended the chanting, because Krishna, he's personally appearing in this age in the form of his chanting. The chanting is always powerful in every age, but in this age, we have no access to meditation, factual meditation. We have no access to sacrifice. Even we made a sacrifice, people make sacrifices in this age simply because they're expecting to get something other than God, to Krishna. They may perform some sacrifice if they think they're going to get some material benefit from it, but not the ultimate benefit, namely Krishna consciousness. And as far as personal relationships with God, practically everyone is trained up in impersonalism. Even when they're offering worship in the temple, generally they have some impersonal conception, thinking that they're going to merge with Krishna, or they're going to become Krishna, or they are Krishna. Therefore, in this age, when people don't have access to deity worship, they don't have any access at all to sacrifice, they have no access whatsoever to meditation, the only thing that's recommended is the Harinam Sankirtan, which can be practiced anywhere at any time, and we can perform sacrifice in that way, Jagavai Vishnu. Of course, we're told that there are 10 offenses, at least, that we have to avoid in order to be able to properly perform the sacrifice so we get the result. The result, namely, being becoming aware of Krishna, remembering Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that by simply chanting something like Krishna, as you know that famous mantra, shnik, shnik, ram, ram, day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty. So by chanting 16 rounds of that particular mantra, not much will happen. Shnik, shnik, ram, ram, day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty. Therefore, it's recommended we try to chant clearly at first the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then the next stage, called Namabhas, means we have to chant to Krishna. The mantra is not directed towards some invisible force in the galaxy. It's directed towards two personalities, namely Srimati Radharani and Krishna, who happen to be present here, by the way. Let me introduce you. That we're chanting to these two personalities who are present here. It is actually a personal it's in the invocative, or I guess invocative. The Hare Krishna mantra is in the evocative tense, which means that we're calling out to Radha and Krishna. And of course, we're not calling out to them for some material benefit. We're not expecting something from them in the future. It is not a contract with the Supreme Lord. I'm working for you 2 hours a day and I expect some old age benefit and I expect some social security and some health care and a few other things for my 2 hours of service to you every day. No, it is, although we're directing our chanting to Radha and Krishna, Srimati Radharani and Krishna, we're asking them for loving service. So that loving service is also not supposed to be some tense in the future. We're not just asking them for some service, loving service. In other words, at the professional stage of chanting, when we chant, we're actually doing it with love. That's the actual offering we're making to Lord Krishna. Of course, if we're not aware of Krishna when we're chanting, there's no question of offering any loving feelings to Krishna. Therefore, the actual experience of the Maha Mantra will be experienced when we become free from our offenses. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura said in the beginning, we're just trying to chant the Hare Krishna Mantra. The Hare Krishna Mantra is not simply some letters of the alphabet. It is actually Srimati Radharani and Krishna. And when we chant to them, then the result will be, eventually we come to the stage of Nishta. Nishta means that we spontaneously remember their form. Some form. It is not that when we remember Krishna's form, it's Krishna's form that's coming directly from Goloka Vrindavan. It may be the form of the deity, maybe the form that's described in the literature, maybe in the form of a painting. We remember some form of Krishna. So that's called becoming conscious of Krishna, Krishna consciousness, which is the name of our society, or of our movement. Then, at the stage of ruchi, taste, we're able to feel Krishna's presence. It is not that Krishna is an ordinary name, or remembrance of Krishna is something ordinary. Remembrance of Krishna is also one of the deities. And the atmosphere they create is full of bliss. But because our consciousness is covered by material desire, therefore we can experience the happiness that comes from actually associating with Krishna more deeply. But once our chanting comes to the platform where we're no longer expecting something other than Krishna, other than his loving association, then we come to the stage of ruchi, where we can actually experience transcendental pleasure in the form of affectionate relationship with Krishna. We can feel Krishna's happiness and affection, and we ourselves can feel our own happiness and affection. Just as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with three internal reasons, namely to experience his Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna. So we also have love for Krishna, and when we experience our love for Krishna, that means we'll experience the beginning of our actual happiness. When we experience our love for other things, it will not produce real happiness. And when we experience Krishna's love for us in the form of ruchi, actual taste, pleasure, then that's further happiness. And when we find out how wonderful Krishna is, how pure and sublime he is, that's further happiness. So that's experienced at the stage of ruchi. And at the stage of asakti, then the happiness becomes so great that we can't consider any other happiness. Even for a moment, the mind leaves thinking about Krishna, but it finds nothing outside of Krishna and immediately comes back to thinking about Krishna again. So that's called asakti. That's the goal we're trying to come to, because from that platform, everything becomes spontaneous and progressive in Krishna consciousness. Finally, one reaches the stage of bhava, where one's feelings towards Krishna become so intense that one understands perfectly one's relation with Krishna, and one starts having Krishna's direct darshan. And at the stage of prema, then one actually realizes fully one's relation with Krishna and enters into serving Krishna in some particular rasa. In any case, in the beginning we're trying to chant offenselessly. That offenselessly means that we're trying to give up our impersonal conception or our conception that we're the lords of the material nature, because that sounds pretty heavy. No, all the innocent devotees here don't think that they're lords. We think we're potentially, well, we think we're co-lords with Krishna, partners. We don't deny that Krishna is one of the lords, but we're just trying to get a partnership with him, that's all. And we're trying to give up our impersonal conception that Krishna is simply some force out there, unknown personality who knows what he's like. And come to the platform accepting that we have nothing better to do than love Krishna. So the first offense against chanting the holy name is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives in propagation of the holy name of the Lord. So of course, in our material conception of life, we've already designated everyone in the universe, including the devotees, as having a plus personality or a minus personality according to our particular desire for happiness in the world. Those who love me, who I think is me, namely my body, this prison that I'm in, those who support the prison or this body, they're my friends and I like them. And anyone, whoever they may be, who doesn't help me in my material objectives, they become my enemy. And if I can't physically kill them, at least mentally I can eliminate them or destroy them. And the most effective way of destroying a person is to criticize them, mentally, physically, whatever else. So this is just a sign of our immaturity. It is not that we should be amazed that we have such thoughts, because this is part of our conditioned nature. So in order to overcome our conditioned nature, we're being taught how to serve the devotees. Serving the devotees is one of the five potent processes by performing which one ecstasy can be aroused even in a neophyte. So that serving the devotee means to physically, mentally, and verbally. So we should try to praise the devotees. We should try to think well of the devotees. We should try to cooperate with the devotees. So this is will bring us to a platform where we'll actually understand what it means to be a devotee. Lord Krishna says that one who claims to be my devotee is actually not my devotee, but one who claims to be a devotee of my devotee, he's actually my devotee. The fact is, whether we're aware or not, every devotee is actually a representative of Krishna, because the little tiny souls within these bodies, namely ourselves, none of us are acting independently of Krishna. Those who don't realize that, who think themselves or accept the idea of independence from Krishna, they're acting in terms of Krishna's devotee called Maya. Maya is also a devotee of Krishna. And their activities, more or less, are to help other people remain in Maya also. They're Maya's representatives, spreading the word of Maya. But those who are Krishna's devotees, to the proportion they have become free from Maya, they're accepting the position of becoming, spreading Krishna's glories and serving Krishna, utilizing one's energies, what we think is our energies, which are not our energies, they're actually Krishna's energies, but we're simply willing to act as an instrument for Krishna. We're not getting in the way. And therefore, any devotee who's trying to act as an instrument for Krishna, what's happening is that their activities are actually manifestation of Krishna's desire. Krishna has one desire, one major desire in this world, that is, he be glorified, namely that people find out about him. So anyone who's doing that, they're actually acting as Krishna's instrument. We may think that we like one instrument better than another, but that's not the proper attitude. All the instruments of Krishna are Krishna's instruments. They're all equally Krishna. It is not that Krishna is one personality and one heart, and he's a different personality and a different heart. It's not that Krishna has one opinion in one heart and a different opinion in another heart. Krishna has the same opinion all the time, everywhere. But he likes variety, so he manifests his desires in a variety of different personalities. But the desire is, somehow or another, that everyone should realize that they're Krishna's servant and they should engage in their loving service to Krishna, loving reciprocation. Therefore, the devotees should be seen as representatives of Krishna, teaching us in different ways how to serve Krishna. And if we serve them in that spirit, then we're directly associating with Krishna. And if we please the devotees, then Krishna is directly pleased and we become conscious of Krishna. The veil that there is someone other than Krishna out there is removed. And we can appreciate everyone and at least the devotees in the beginning, as representatives of Krishna. And later on, one is able to understand how other persons, other souls, are also related to Krishna, and acting either directly or indirectly under Krishna's direction. The second offense, of course, we generally don't worry about, because it's to believe that the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are independent or equal to the holy name of Lord Vishnu. So we're generally not very concerned with this offense, because as I mentioned before, we don't believe in the demigods. We don't believe in Lord Brahma, we don't believe in Lord Shiva. We think the Bhagavatam is generally mythology, which we'll come up to. But what to speak of a four-headed man sitting on a lotus flower? Or another man with the Ganges flowing through his hair and snakes, garland of snakes. We think they're interesting stories, but we don't really believe in them. So we have no problem thinking that Vishnu, who we hardly believe in either, is independent, or that these so-called demigods are independent of him. We don't concern ourselves. Instead, generally we worship some rock star or movie star, or we chant their names, or the latest scandal in ISKCON, we chant those names, and we think they're more superior or independent of the name of Vishnu. In order to come to the second-class platform, we have to, first of all, discover what the name of Vishnu is. That every name that exists is related to Krishna, and every name is subordinate to Krishna. Therefore, when we read the Krishna book, for instance, there are so many words in the Krishna book, so how are they all spiritual? Why are they different from any other words? They're all spiritual because they're all related to Vishnu or Krishna. Similarly, when all our words are related to Krishna, in service to Krishna, they'll also become spiritual. And otherwise, if they're not connected directly to Krishna, then they're material. So we also worship the demigods because we know their relation to Krishna. We know by this philosophy, everything's relation to Krishna. And when we speak about these things in relation to Krishna, that's called spiritual. That's why someone can go out on book distribution and say things which are seemingly very ordinary. But because they're related to Lord Krishna, they become spiritual mantras, and they elevate not only the person who's speaking them, the devotee who's speaking them, but even the people who are hearing them, they become elevated because it's all in relation to Krishna, and therefore they purchase one book about Krishna to hear about some more. The third offense is to blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. When we read the Vedas, if we do that at all, then sometimes we hear passages that seem completely beyond our conception, which is most of the book. Because from the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that we're not this body. And it's not so easy, it's easy actually, if we're submissive, to theoretically understand that we're not this body. But its realization is not so easy. Otherwise, we'd have a very easy time to become fully Krishna conscious. But we hear that philosophy in the next moment, we forget, or we don't take it very seriously. And when the senses and the mind are demanding, and our perverted intelligence is agreeing, then we fall into the trap of serving Maya. So even to understand the basic philosophy that we're not this body is quite deep and requires a lot of austerity, penance, and charity, sacrifice, in order to actually come to the realization. So what to speak of the other parts of the Vedic literature that we hear about? How can we understand them? We can't. We can't understand about the demigods presently, because with a little intellectualization, we can understand that the planets are actually moving their orbits according to a superior power, that all the arrangements in this universe are made by superior power. But we may hear about how the superior powers arrange things, just as having trees that are 10,000 yojanas high, namely 80,000 miles high, which is probably 120,000 kilometers high. So we may sit here and try to figure out what does a tree look like that's 120,000 kilometers high. Certainly, if it fell down, we wouldn't like to be underneath it. We probably couldn't see it coming either. And what to speak of having mango fruits on top of it, which are only small little fruits the size of elephants. And when they fall from the trees, there's a lot of them, they fall rivers of mango juice, along with blackberry juice and other kinds of juice, and they flow down to the ocean of milk. And when the sun heats this juice, it forms on the shore of the ocean of milk, it forms into gold. And of course the demigods come there and collect the gold. So this sounds like some story to us. And indeed, it is a story to us because we have no direct access. There's no video playing that we can watch it all happen. There's no newscaster there reporting to us the events. We have no telescope that can reach that far. The only way we know about these things is to hear about them. So we don't have to blindly accept them. We don't have to blindly reject them either. We simply have to understand that if there is a reality on these planets, this is the only reality that's being presented to us outside of science fiction. Nor is it really very important for our devotional service whether there are not mango fruits on the size of elephants on trees that are hundreds of thousands of miles high. It has nothing to do at all with our devotional service. In order to realize Krishna, it doesn't matter if there is mountains, huge demigods, whatever. It makes no difference whatsoever. So this part of the Vedic literature is actually not that essential for us to realize in order to perform devotional service. So neither we should reject it or accept it. Instead, we should spend most of our time trying to understand things in relation to devotional service, so that we ourselves can get the essence and perform our service with devotion, with knowledge and devotion, and therefore come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Whether or not, when we become completely Krishna conscious, we meet these demigods or go there, it's not really very important, because at that particular stage, everyone is seen in relation to Krishna equally. The next offense is to minimize or disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or sometimes it's said, consider him an ordinary person, or maybe in the future, her. The idea is that the spiritual master is supposed to be on the platform of steady devotional service. Steady devotional service means he or she is consistently acting in the realm of service to Krishna, and that's not ordinary. And by taking the instructions of the spiritual master, we're supposed to come to the steady platform of devotional service where we can chant Hare Krishna and remember Krishna, become progressively more and more aware of Krishna in our daily lives. Now, the spiritual master may sometimes seem to be an ordinary person because he may have two arms, and I have two arms. He has two legs, I have two legs. He eats prasadam, and I eat prasadam. So I talk about Krishna. He also talks about Krishna. So basically, we're more or less the same, maybe a couple of years difference in initiation, but not so significant. So what's the difference? The difference is, actually, we're trying to learn how to perceive anyone who's superior to us in devotional service as our guru, spiritual master. That's part of our training. Ultimately, the pure devotee sees every living entity superior to him in service to Krishna. So we have to find someone in this universe that we can actually hear from and direct our activities on their basis of their desires and instructions, so that we feel ourselves to be a servant. In this material world, everyone feels themselves to be the Lord to some extent, namely this body. And this body, this false ego, has a conception that so many things belong to me. At least this body belongs to me. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, when he was questioned, how many disciples do you have? Sometimes he would reply, I have four. So people would be very surprised that you've been preaching so long and you've only made four disciples. He said, well, my four disciples are my two hands and two legs, because they consistently listen to me. So in this world, we may identify ourselves even with this body, thinking, I'm in control of the body, I'm the Lord of the body. But actually, we're not. As we grow older, we'll find out we have less control over the body than we actually thought we did. So the fact is that we're not the lords of the material nature. Krishna is the Lord, and we're the servant. And our service is directed towards agreeing to Krishna's desires. Krishna's desires manifest not only through my mind, believe it or not, there's actually some reality outside of my mind. That reality is manifested as Krishna's devotees. So we have to choose at least one devotee, because otherwise it gets very confusing, because Krishna is expressing his desire through many devotees. So we choose one devotee. If we serve those desires, namely the desire the spiritual master teaches us how to engage our energies, or the energies Krishna has given us, in his service. So if we follow his instructions and do that, engage our energies in Krishna's service, then the result is we'll become Krishna conscious. But as soon as we think that everyone, including the spiritual master, everyone is an ordinary person, even if they're engaged in devotional service, then at once we'll think that Krishna is also ordinary. After all, his service is ordinary, his devotees are ordinary, so he also must be ordinary. That's called Maya. The next offense, two offenses are just to summarize that. So that means that the spiritual master, as one of Krishna's representatives, because Krishna has many representatives, the spiritual master teaches us how to understand that we should utilize our energies in Krishna's service and how to relate to the other representatives of Krishna so we're not confused. In other words, how to understand through all Krishna's representatives what Krishna wants. Sometimes it may appear to be contradictory, but that's the spiritual master's duty, to teach us how to assimilate the philosophy in such a way as that we can understand in all circumstances what Krishna's desire are and how to satisfy the devotees. That takes some intelligence. The next two offenses are to give some consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination, and to give some interpretation of the holy name of the Lord. One personality, or we may think that it's an exaggeration or imagination, that if I simply chant Hare Krishna once, I can be back in the spiritual world. So it is not imagination, as all the other activities of devotional service are explained in the Nectar of Devotion, such as clapping our hands in front of the deities, how all our sinful reactions, they fly up, just like birds out of the tree. So all of us, we can go in kirtan. Usually no one claps anymore because we're more technologically advanced. But we do that, we don't notice any of our reactions flying up out of the tree, out of this body. We seem just as sinfully inclined as before. Doesn't matter how. Things seem pretty much the same. Or if we take Charanamrita, then we immediately our body is transformed into a Vaikuntha resident, etc. So these are not exaggerations according to the Nectar of Devotion, but they may have been achieved by some personalities, just like the four Kumaras who happened to be in Vaikuntha at the time. When they happened to see Lord Narayan directly, a few extra things added in there. When they smelled the tulsi leaves on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, their minds changed, and they went from the impersonal stage to the personal stage. So we can imagine if we were in Vaikuntha, and we had direct darshan of the lotus feet of Narayan, and we happened to smell the tulsi leaves, we'd probably change from impersonalism to personalism too. Something would happen at least. So under certain extraordinary circumstances, these things happen. Similarly, if we chant Hare Krishna, sometimes things do happen. If we chant in the right mood, at the right time, and for some reason or another, Krishna wants to give us his mercy, then we experience something extraordinary, something spiritual when we're chanting. And the reason is that Krishna is revealing himself. It is not an imagination, the glories that are explained, but they happen under certain circumstances. And to give interpretation of the holy name of the Lord, the reason why the holy name works is because it's Krishna. One famous personality declared that the reason why it works is that the people who chant Hare Krishna hyperventilate. So he used to chant very quickly. He was a poet who chanted Hare Krishna mantra before his poetry readings. Chanted very fast because that way he'd get everyone high by hyperventilation. But that's not why it works. It works because we're directly, to some extent, getting Krishna's association. The next offense is to commit sinful activities in the strength of chanting Hare Krishna. So, not to take up too much time here. The holy names are spiritually potent, and by coming into contact with Krishna, they free us from our sinful reactions. They free us from avidya. They give us direct perception of Krishna. But if one commits sinful activities while on the basis of chanting Hare Krishna, one will actually not make any progress, because our chanting depends not only on a mechanical process, but on the mood of devotion and service to Krishna. But if there's some ulterior reason for chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna is not a fool. He's not blind to our motivation, and therefore he does not actually reveal himself to the chanter. Instead, thinking oneself will become free, Krishna may free ourselves from some reaction to our sinful activities, but the reaction for this offense is much greater. One will never become Krishna conscious in such a mentality. And if we don't become Krishna conscious, then we have to stay here practically forever. It'll be a long, long time before we make any progress. The next offense is to consider the chanting Hare Krishna to be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruit of activities of Karmakanda. There is really no comparison to obtaining any material position in this world. Generally speaking, people in this world, they get used to their material position after some time. It becomes ordinary. And they want something more and more and more. Of course, nowadays people become crazy, so they don't know what more to want. you have a lot of money, they spend it on things that are actually destructive because they're in the mode of ignorance. But those who are progressive, they know that there are higher states of consciousness in this world where one can enjoy progressively more and more and more up to the standard of the demigods or even Brahmaloka. Extraordinary lifespan and sense pleasure. But the devotees know that even if one achieves Brahmaloka, then that is only a temporary situation and the standard of happiness there is limited. But Krishna consciousness can bring one past Brahmaloka. First of all, we'll realize that when we chant more and more offenselessly, the chanting itself can bring us to the highest stage of the mode of goodness, or at least, let's say, it can bring us first to the mode of passion, out of ignorance, and then it can bring us to the mode of goodness, and then it can bring us transcendental to the mode of goodness. Generally speaking, the devotees who come to the movement, they're in the mode of ignorance and passion, they're in distress most of the time, and therefore when it brings them a little bit to passion, teaches them how to sell something or collect, they think, I've been liberated. All my problems are solved, now I can go out and make my own Vaikuntha planet. So the chanting, once they get up to that stage, or if they stay around for some time, then they try to come to the platform, they can liberate themselves from material anxiety and distress, insecurity, whatever. So the chanting will bring us, if it's done properly, through the modes of ignorance, to the passion, to the mode of goodness, but it can also bring us to a transcendental platform where even the mode of goodness seems insignificant. So that we have to experience and then we'll appreciate it. That there's no Vedic ritual that can do that, help us transcend the modes of even goodness, but the chanting can do that even in this lifetime. The next offense is to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. There are many persons in this world who can't understand anything about what we're doing. So when we try to explain to them on the basis of what we want to say, that will not be very effective. In other words, all of us have our realizations of Krishna consciousness, and of course we want to explain them to others. But better to look at others and try and figure out what they could probably understand and explain Krishna consciousness according to their level. Of course, we generally don't do that anymore. When a newcomer comes, someone who's giving the Sunday feast immediately talks about how they're all hogs out there and dogs and they're all going to hell. The only thing is that they have to become a gopi in Krishna's pastime. That will save them. So generally we don't jump so quickly, but we have to be careful that we explain things. Although it may seem just like there are other movements who proclaim that this Bhagavad Gita is so ordinary that people get bored reading it. We should give them some literature to read which is more enthusing than Bhagavad Gita. It's more enlivening, more intimate and revealing. So for those who haven't completely understood that we're not this body, which I happen to be one of them, it's not recommended that we jump to these other literatures. We should try to understand as clearly as possible through the process that's recommended, the different stages of the process, so we can actually realize that we're spiritual and that Krishna is the supreme spiritual person. Then other aspects of devotional service will automatically be open to our understanding. So if we start preaching and explaining things beyond our present level of realization, not only they'll get into trouble, the people we're talking to, that we'll certainly get into trouble also. And we'll imagine ourselves to be on some level which is beyond our actual experience. And we won't make any real progress. Most of our progress will just be imaginary. So in other words, mostly we should try to explain to others that we're not this body and that there is a guide out there and his name for us is Krishna. The next offense is to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. So devotional material attachment is usually like a layer, or Prabhupada described it just like trying to clean coal. The more you rub the coal, the blacker it gets. So sometimes it seems like that. or you peel an onion, every layer seems more or less the same. So similarly, we have different layers of attachment, and luckily, Krishna doesn't present all the different attachments we have at once, because we'd be completely bewildered. Generally, it's one attachment after another is being presented to us. One misconception, one material attachment, whatever. And we have to work on it, try to get ourselves free from it, not think that finally this attachment has arisen in my mind and I just can't give it up. I've been cultivating this since time immemorial and I'm not going to give it up. It doesn't matter who Krishna is or what he wants me to do. So we have to be prepared to give up even the most insignificant or the most intense attachments we have as they're presented to us, work on them, try to become free from them, try to understand them in the light of Krishna consciousness, and then gradually we can make progress. And if another misconception or attachment appears within our experience, we shouldn't be surprised. There's probably a few more behind them also. And then not to pay attention. So attention is where we give our love. Actually, when we wake up in the morning, immediately we're paying attention to our body, listening to all the sounds it's making, feeling all its desires and planning out its day, its menu, everything is being planned out. So we're quite attentive to our body and its needs. Therefore, we sometimes or usually get distracted from our activities in Krishna consciousness, especially when we're chanting Hare Krishna. The mind will present so many things to us in order to review how the body's feeling, how much we ate yesterday night or yesterday, what we're going to eat today, all our plans for the next 20 years, every person that came into our lives in the last 30 lifetimes. So many things are presented to us. So we have to forget about these things, at least for some time, and try to chant attentively, clearly the holy name. Try to use our energy, efforts to do that. Try to chant to Krishna, and then try to chant happily. Sometimes we talk about love. It seems very vague and abstract. We have no love for Krishna. How can we? But at least we should chant happily without anxiety. And then when we start remembering Krishna, then we can, Krishna will give us the intelligence how to chant more and more happily. And when suddenly we realize that happy chanting, free from anxiety, is actually the beginning of our feelings of love for Krishna. And if we get distracted, Krishna advises that we simply put our minds back on Krishna, try to carry on the process of focusing our minds, focusing our attention, and giving our love to Krishna. That's who Prabhupada defines the beginning of the Krishna book as Krishna consciousness. So, thank you. Now we're supposed to give the beads out here. That's you. Now, you can come offer your obeisances to Prabhupada and the deities here. In a loud voice. You have to say Prabhupada's Purna mantra. Okay. Now you can have a little variety here. You can come over here.
Change me around.
And you can offer basis. Well, first you're offering to Prabhupada, now to me. So, it comes within range.
Sorry, I don't know anything to do.
What are the four way of the principles you'll follow for how long?
Well, for the rest of the time in this body and probably beyond that.
Hopefully.
No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling.
And how many rounds do you chant every day?
A minimum of 16.
Yes.
Good rounds.
So, we're also asked to that by the DBC to point to their resolution that you follow the authority structure within ISKCON, which is represented by Prabhupada's authority structure beginning with the DBC.
Yes.
Good. Put your hands like this. So your name will be Sarva Mangala Devi Dasi. So Sarva means all, and Mangala means auspicious. So you're that's one of the names of the principal gopis, 108 principal gopis.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. You can offer basis again.
Here?
Yeah, again. So maybe since this one of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, you can go back there.
Yeah.
One of his disciples is receiving second initiation, so I'll just say a couple of words about second initiation. As I mentioned, the process of devotional service culminates in thinking about Krishna, meditating on Him. That is possible in the mode of goodness without distraction. So to help us focus our minds upon Krishna, we chant Gayatri Mantra and other mantras, practicing thinking about Krishna. So Gayatri Mantra, there's no real difference between the Gayatri Mantra and the Hare Krishna Mantra, but we're utilizing it so that we can think about Krishna. We can also read the Krishna book, think about Krishna, but this is a regulated service, Gayatri, Brahminical initiation. It's an opportunity to help us progress quicker to the mode of goodness, and in the mode of goodness we can also chant the Hare Krishna Mantra with more devotion, more attention, and ultimately transcend. So the Hare Krishna Mantra brings us beyond the mode of goodness into transcendence. But Brahminical initiation is to encourage us to become clean, especially to become truthful, to develop the Brahminical qualities, so especially that the Hare Krishna Mantra will be experienced more powerfully. So in that in mind, we're the activities and the duties of the Brahminical initiation is to encourage us more to come to the mode of goodness. Is there a picture of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj here? Should I have a picture of him here? No one has one?
I can't strike the word.
Anyhow, just think of him. Good. So now we'll have the... Any questions? Okay, let's go. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna.